earth-shatteringness. As we turn the page and consider Yah's testimony and the religious assault on it, I'd like to make two comments that were in the preceding news segment. It began with the onslaught of passages of gay marriage proposals. There was also an item in the news where the socialist government of France has just, I can't say passed, but enacted legislation approving of gay marriage. And you may say, you know, what does this have to do with the price of potatoes? The issue with the gay marriage is that it's specifically designed to attack the heart and soul of Yahweh's message to humankind. His message to us is that he wants us to embrace his covenant, which is a family-oriented covenant relationship. It is based upon a man and a woman coming together, and as husband and wife, and as mother and father, nurturing, raising children, protecting them, and sheltering them. It is God's overall purpose in our lives is for us to embrace the covenant, and for he, as our heavenly Father, to teach us, to guide us, to nourish us, to protect us, to literally save us from ourselves. And so by attacking the heart and soul of Yah's purpose, his message to us through the advancement of gay marriage, we see, we are witness to the ongoing assault by socialist secular humanists against Yahweh. And you ought to see it from that perspective. It is a devastating issue. Now, speaking of devastating, as you may have also heard, the markets are collapsing today. It's already down 300 points on news of Obama's election. The reason for that isn't just this this mythos of, well, we have a Democrat that's going to be bad for business. No. The reason for that is that they know that capital gains, which is the really the engine of economic growth, is going to be changed radically. It's now about 15% going to go upwards and up into the mid-20s. And they also know that individual income tax rates are increasing and corporate income tax rates are increasing, so that individuals who actually made some money in the market this past year will all be selling their stocks, and that sell-off will be prompted by the fact that that the tax rate on those that sale will be much lower this year than it will be next year. And so there will be a great sell-off in the market. They know that's going to occur. They know that every investor has talked to their broker, or their broker has talked to them about the necessity of doing that. And that is what's driving the market down. It will continue to have a downward effect on the market over the next 2 months. That said, it is Yahweh who wants us to be Torah observant. He wants us to be Torah observant for a singular reason. And that is, when you observe the Torah, you come to see his plan, his purpose, his will, his desire, his offer, which is for us to come to know him, to love him, and to choose to engage in and benefit from his covenant. That is the sole purpose of us being Torah observant. There's nothing more to it than that. Everything else in the Torah is all designed to turn our attention to the model that God is creating, to this desire of God for us to become adopted into his family, to become his children, to come to know him, love him, trust and rely upon him, and to join this family at the exclusion of all others. That's what God wants. That's the purpose of being Torah observant. And yet, as we read in yesterday's program and the one at the end of last week, the Christian apologist will say that we talk about Yahusha, they'll use a bogus name, being Torah observant, but what does that have to do with you and me and what we're capable of? Now, are you capable of observing the Torah, Larry?
Yes.
How do you observe? How do you observe the Torah, Larry?
I understand it. I read it. I embrace it.
Right.
I observe it. I watch right. it. I look at it. Yeah. I let right. it lead me in my everyday life.
So by focusing on the Torah.
Actions of doing or rituals or
no.
any such thing.
So by reading the Torah. Yeah, by reading the Torah, you're observing it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? And by reading the Torah, you are observing it, and by observing it in that way, you consider it, and you come to know it, you come to understand it, and so you're in a position to respond to what the Torah is offering in a reasonable and rational way. Is there any part of that that is particularly difficult, Larry?
No.
Are you
it's easier than I thought. I'm required to put in nothing. There's no cost to me. It's amazing.
So, did you find any laws in the Torah that you were told by God to obey?
Not really, no.
In fact, is there a Hebrew word for obey?
No, there isn't. Shamar.
What does shamar mean?
It just means to observe, to watch.
And what is the, do you know what the basis of the Hebrew word is that's changed to obey in English Bibles? Every time you read obey in an English Bible, there is a Hebrew word that underlies that word. It is related to shamar, but it is not shamar. Are you familiar with that word?
No, not
okay.
I am familiar with it's shem. It's got a
yes,
shem root.
Yeah, as soon as I say it, you'll recognize it. It's shama.
Shama, yes.
And shama means to listen. When you recite Yah's testimony, we are listening to God. For example, let's observe the Torah and let's listen to God and demonstrate that we can do so. I'm going to recite this statement, and in reciting the statement, we are observing the Torah, we are listening to God, all in this one process. Only one Torah has and shall always exist for the naturally born person and from the visitor from different countries and cultures. We just observe the Torah. Was that difficult?
No.
No. So why do Christians say it is impossible for us to fulfill the requirements demanded by the law?
Because they think that there is a word called law. They don't understand what's going on. They've taken a very small part of the Torah and corrupted it.
Yeah. Now, in the word Torah is based on a Hebrew verb. It happens to be the same Hebrew verb that is the basis of Jerusalem. It's Yara. God. Not my conclusion here. It's what God says that His Torah is based upon a verb, and the verb is Yara. And the verb Yara is the source from which instruction, guidance, teaching, and direction flow. So Torah is the source from which Yahweh's guidance, teaching, direction flow. Now, if I were ordering you, commanding you, legislating to you that you jump off a cliff and fly, you would probably say, I can't do that. But if I instead were saying, I want to instruct you on how to build a path. In fact, I'm going to go better than this. Rather than you flying off the cliff so that you can get to the other side of the gorge, I'm going to build a bridge for you that crosses that gorge from all of the trouble on one side to the perfect realm on the other. I'm going to build the bridge for you. I'm going to tell you when to meet me on that bridge, and I'm going to hold your hand as you walk across that bridge, and I'm telling you, you can trust that bridge because I built it myself. Now, can you do that?
Well, yeah, I would go from Azab to Barith.
Right. So you could do that, right?
Yes, so, I can do
so,
that.
So if the only requirement of participating in this covenant and going from separation from God to being engaged in a relationship with Him is observing what He had to say in His Torah guidance so that we could walk across that gorge, that separation between the institutions and the beguiling nature of man to a total and complete knowledge and understanding of Yahweh. You could do that. In fact, you might even want to do that.
Oh, I definitely want to do that. In fact, I do it.
Right.
So,
and
you know,
now, did when Yahusha arrived, did he tell us that, you know, with my arrival now, you can come to the conclusion that you no longer should observe the Torah, that it no longer relates to you, that it is no longer appropriate, that it no longer provides guidance, you should not attend to the invitations that Yahweh has instructed for you to be called out of this world and to meet with Him, and the terms and conditions of the covenant as they're presented in the Torah are of no effect whatsoever, because now all you need to do is believe in me. Did he say that?
No, never.
No. When he said that he came to fulfill the Torah, is there any way in context of his discussion to come to the conclusion that he came to do away with it?
No, in fact, in Matanyahu, they come up to him, teacher, what's good and beneficial things shall I do to obtain eternal life? And Yahusha says to them, why are you asking me about what's good and beneficial? There's only one healing and beneficial message. If you wish to enter life, keep his instructions.
You're right. Where would you find Yahweh's instructions? In the book labeled instructions? Yeah, maybe in the book labeled instructions. That's what Torah means. What he said there, when he said in the book, in his instructions, what he actually said, because he was not speaking Greek and he wasn't speaking English, is he used the Hebrew word for instructions, which is Torah.
Torah.
That's where he told us to look. This is an interesting statement. We were considering Yosha's statement. Let's read so that we don't make the error of taking things out of context. I want to share a substantial portion of Yosha's teaching on the Mount. It was his first public declaration, the most important statement he would ever make. It's something that Christians can't deal with because it completely undermines their religion. But let's consider what he had to say over this and the next segment. Do not assume that I have come to dismantle or invalidate or to do away with the Torah or the prophets. I have not come to do away with it, but instead to completely fulfill it. Truly, I say to you, until heaven and earth shall pass away, not one jot or tittle, which would be the smallest stroke, the smallest letter, which would be the yod in Hebrew, or the top stroke or horn of any Hebrew letter, shall be passed by, be ignored, or disregarded from which is established in the Torah until such time as it all happens. Therefore, do not dismiss or invalidate or abolish these terms and conditions, because people who do so time. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We're joined today by Larry. We're in the process of doing the very thing that Yahusha asked us to do, the very thing that Yahweh asked us to do. We're observing Yahweh's Torah, which means teaching, instruction, direction. The Masayah Yahusha picked up the same theme that we were just discussing. In the same public declaration, his longest public declaration, the one that defined his entire purpose and message, this time in the context of seeking the truth so that we can make an informed choice. What is the purpose of being taught? What is the purpose of receiving direction from your Father and instructions? Is so that you can make an informed choice. And so, speaking of the place that he has instructed us to look to for answers, Yosha said, ask, and making an earnest request, and it shall be given to you. Seek, searching diligently for knowledge, and you will discover the truth and find what you're looking for. Now, where was he, what topic was he just talking about? The Torah. Where would you seek diligently for knowledge so that you discover the truth? Yah's Torah. Knock, requesting acceptance of the door, and it will be opened for you. Where would you knock? At the door that is presented in the Torah. Where's the door in the Torah? It's Passover.
It'd be Pesach.
You know? Yeah, Passover. For them, all who... Yeah, go ahead.
Can I add something here? Sure. You know, one of the things that that you point out is that there are six names, and they're mentioned in Nehemiah.
Mm-hmm.
And And basically, when you put these names together, what it does is it tells you that Yahusha is the Messiah, and that he does the work of Yahweh and redeems and restores the family. Right. You know, on these assembly days.
Yeah. And I'm telling you how to do that right here.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, he's explaining how he does that right here.
Yes. And Christians make a giant mistake because they don't understand that the redemption is the doorway of the Torah, and the person fulfilling the Torah is Yahusha, and it starts with Passover and it ends with Sukkah, and each one of those days he literally plays out in history and fulfills.
Yeah, there is. I was talking with Scott before the program began on the fact that since America is going to cease to exist as a sovereign nation within the next 15 years,
I think before that,
that the question then becomes: on whom can you trust? Whom can you rely? What is the individual salvation from that? And, of course, it is Yahweh. And so we were talking about, you know, it would make a lot of sense to go ahead and sign, seal, and deliver your acceptance of the covenant sooner rather than later. And then there was the thought, well, you know, I'm just now coming to know the terms and conditions of the covenant. I'm for the first time hearing these invitations that God has invited me to participate in and meet with him, that of course begin with the doorway named Pesach or Passover. And my thought here and my response to Scott is the same that I would share with all who are listening. Yes, there is a specific timetable that we await Yahweh to open the door for us to eternal light on life on Passover, and there's a certain day that we meet with Yahweh for the express purpose of him redeeming us and reconciling us. The covenant can be embraced on any day. And the benefits of the covenant are articulated, played out, and enabled through these seven steps that we are invited to walk to God. These things go hand in hand. And the thing that we can do right now, today, is we can sign the covenant, we can embrace the covenant, we can act upon the terms and conditions of the covenant, the first of which is to walk away from our country, to separate ourselves from the babble of religion and politics and patriotism and militantism and the economic schemes that we have become so dependent upon. And we can do that and come to trust and rely upon Yahweh and walk to him and become perfect at any moment.
Abraham agree. I mean,
these things.
I do spend a certain amount of time, I mean, exposing religion and exposing the political actors.
Right.
It doesn't matter to me which political actor is there. I expose them. And, you know, some people kind of get that confused with the idea that I might be for the other one. I'm not.
You
know,
yeah.
So, I'm exposing whoever's in front of me, you know, and that's what needs to happen, I suppose. You know,
yeah.
We need to
show a combination of two things.
Their ways, you know.
Well, two things. You, for someone to be willing to walk away from their country, to stop relying upon their country, it's important that they know that their country is not reliable, and that path will be to their detriment as the country crumbles around them. But it's also important at the same time to encourage them to walk in the opposite direction so that they come to know, trust, and rely upon Yah. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Gianna. You, like Larry, can engage in this discussion by calling 1-877-300-7645. We were considering Yosha's testimony as he explained how he was going to make it possible for us to benefit from the promises that Yahweh had made in his Torah. And so he said that we should diligently search for knowledge to discover the truth, that we should knock, acting, requesting acceptance at the door, which is Passover, and that it would be opened for us. And then he says those who make an earnest request receive, and they will be accepted. Accepted where? Into the covenant. And those who actively search for the location and for knowledge, who really desire to learn, will know the truth. That is the purpose of observation, of listening to Yahweh, is that if you devote the time, if you invest the time, if you make this a priority, you too will know the truth. Those who request the acceptance at this door, which is Pesach, will be granted entrance. All you have to do is answer the invitation. What man is among you, when his son shall ask him for a loaf of bread, will give him a stone? Or if he should ask for a fish, would give him a snake? You notice that the reference here again is to family. What man is among you when his son, talking about father-son, would give him a snake? If you, then, being morally corrupt, know how to give good and generous gifts to your children, how much more, by way of contrast, will your Father who is in heaven, he's speaking of Yahweh, produce and give valuable and generous gifts to those who ask him? Now, how would you ask Yahweh for a generous and valuable gift if you don't listen to him? If you are unwilling to consider his Torah guidance, how is it that you would even know what to ask for? Now, throughout the Torah, the doorway to life is synonymous with Passover. It is there where we must all begin our journey if we seek to live with God. It is the first of seven steps in the path to life. This now is from Matanyah 7:12-14. For then this is the Torah. Let me read that again. For then this is the Torah, as well as the prophets. Enter, starting with and experiencing the first step in the path along the way of the narrow and specific doorway. Because the way is wide, it is crafted to be broad, expansive, and unreliable, and the route is broad which leads away and which deceives and influences someone to go astray to the point of destruction and perishing, needlessly destroying themselves, squandering their lives. And the vast preponderance of people are those experiencing this path. The doorway is narrow, it's exacting and specific, and the path goes against the crowd, which leads to life, and few discover and experience it. There are so many profound insights in that statement, all of which are squandered on the religious. Religions are popular, and therefore they are excluded from the path to life. They aren't going against the crowd, they're going with the crowd.
Not a narrow gate when you got a billion people on it, our path,
that is,
brother.
That is correct. According to Yahusha, the religion of Christianity cannot be the path to life, because to experience the path to life, you have to go against the crowd. Now, he's talking about this doorway. And he says the doorway is responsible for what? Life. Did he say the doorway was responsible for redemption? No. Did he say that the doorway was responsible for your reconciliation? No. What did he say the doorway was responsible for?
Life.
Yeah. All Passover does for those that answer the invitation is transform you from mortal to immortal.
Well,
that's
you know,
a good... That's a good start, but if you don't take the next step, it's actually counterproductive. And there is the bane of Christianity. If you were to embrace what Passover means, what Yahusha did when he hung on the upright pillar on Mount Moriah on Passover, if you were to embrace it but not accept the invitation to matzah, then you would end up spending your eternity with Satan in the abyss.
Yeah, that's where all the sin is taken out of your body. I mean,
exactly. So that's a very profound statement. And this doorway to life is equated with the Torah. He says this is the Torah. The Torah is the gift. Rather than being the curse, rather being than being the burden, rather than being a set of laws which you cannot possibly obey, Yahusha just said, this is the Torah. It is the gift of our Heavenly Father.
And it might be instructive to note, too, that when people are looking at their New Testaments, every time it says, you evildoers, what it says, what it's really saying in the parchments is instead of evildoers, which would mean don't go to the bar, don't whore around, you know, all the things that they're telling you at the church, building you're attending. What it's really evildoers is where they replace people in opposition to the Torah, if you look at the actual parchment writings. Am I correct there?
Yeah. So advising us, therefore, not to succumb to religious myths, such as the New Testament, such as the Talmud, such as the Quran, Yahusha warned all who would listen about the author of much of the New Testament, Paul, the founder of Christianity, the most fitting candidate for this dire prophecy that has caused
sheep's clothing
to lead so many people astray. He says, you must be alert. And you should carefully examine, you should prosecute and then turn away from false prophets who come to you from within, dressed in sheep's clothing, and yet they are actually wolves who are exceptionally self-promoting. The term for wolves here is interesting, and it's interesting, it's harpax. Harpax is a vicious carnivorous thief who secretly and deliberately robs, extorts, and snatches away. For those who know their Greek, they would recognize that harpazo, which is the term that Paul uses to speak of the rapture, and it's a snatching away, that harpazo is Paul's most famous term because Paul's lone prophecy was about the harpazo rapture or snatching away. And so here, Yahusha used a term, harpax, that is most identified with Paul's letters, his one prophecy, and yet he's referring here to a false prophet who would snatch you away, and saying that this whole promise of Paul on this harpazo snatching away rapture is a false prophecy of someone who wants to snatch you away from the Torah, from Yahweh, from him. Now, of course, there's more to it than this. What is the what was the tribe of Paul? Sheol was a what? He was a Benjamite. What is Yah's prophecy? Because he went through and he spoke of each of the 12 tribes and created a metaphor for each of those 12 tribes. What did he say about Benjamin? You're a wolf. This is really strong medicine, folks. There's only one person in all of human history that has effectively, as a wolf dressed in sheep's clothing, led countless people astray. Paul.
Well, of course, you know them by their fruits, too. Jeremiah says that.
Right. Now,
and
are
the
there
fruits of Paul is the foundations of Christianity and billions of people led astray.
Right. And it's not just Paul, because Paul was endorsed by Marcion, who created the New and Old Testaments. Paul was endorsed by Constantine, who hated the everything associated with Yahweh, because Paul could be adopted, could be embraced within paganism, but Yahweh could not. You could build a religion around Paul, but you couldn't around Yahusha. So he says you must be alert and you should carefully examine and turn away from false prophets who come to you from within dressed as sheep's clothing and yet actually are wolves who are exceptionally self-promoting and self-serving, harpax, snatching you away. Now, in the context of the Torah enduring forever, and of being the lone source of life, the doorway to life, the man's best known for contradicting God on this very topic, while at the same time claiming to be an apostle chosen by God, is Paul. He, more than anyone who has ever lived, fits the definition of a false prophet, one who came dressed in sheep's clothing, yet was actually a wolf, promoting his own message, the gospel of grace, to annul the Torah. In
and
this
the way you
context,
pronounce his name, isn't that really Sheol? Sounds a lot like Sheol.
Yeah.
And it means the question.
Right. The Hebrew word that speaks of what we call hell is Sheol. It's written identically, and it means the place of questioning. It's written identically to, in Hebrew, to Paul's actual Hebrew name. Shaul and Sheol are written identically in the original Hebrew. And so,
not a mind blower.
Just another clue. If I were to give you all of the history books that are available and all of the written history of humankind, and if I were to say to you, I want you to tell me, someone who came, probably was even listening in this audience, someone who qualifies for this condemnation, this pay attention, don't become susceptible to the false prophet who would snatch you away from the teaching that is in my Torah to this doorway to life. If I were to give you all of time and all of the history books of mankind, you could not find a more apt candidate for this condemnation than Shaul, Paul. In fact, Paul becomes impossible to exclude. If you exclude Paul, then there is no one of merit who fits this condemnation, and Yosha was just misleading his audience. Think about that. Still speaking of Paul, the Benjamite wolf, and his associates, particularly his lover Timothy, Yosha told us how to recognize them. Indeed, as a result, you will know with certainty, you will recognize and understand. This is epikonosko. This is the highest form of knowledge. Epikonosko requires a complete and accurate understanding based upon a thorough examination of the evidence. In other words, you can only epikonosko if you were to compare Yah's Torah teaching with Paul's letters. It requires diligence and observation. Indeed, as a result, you will come to epikonosko, know with certainty, and understand through careful examination of the evidence, and know them regarding their fruit from the results and harvest. What's the fruit of Paul? His letters and the religion of Christianity. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Telling us that if we are diligent, if we are circumspect, if we search for the truth, that we will come as a result to know, epikonosko, that through careful examination of the evidence, we will come to recognize who is a false prophet. And the careful examination of the evidence requires us to compare Paul's letters, which is his fruit, and the fruit of those who have rallied around him and embraced his teaching, and compare that to Yah's Torah. And we find that Paul never quoted Yahweh accurately, and when he did quote him, he not only misquoted him, but he took what he said out of context and then twisted it to serve his twisted agenda. So the fruit that is rotten here is comprised of Galatians, 1 and 2 Thessalonians, 1 and 2 Corinthians, Romans, Philippians, Colossians, Ephesians, Titus, Philemon, 1 and 2 Timothy, Hebrews, and most of Acts. Because of their inclusion within the so-called Christian New Testament, this is the rotten fruit from Paul and his associates. Acts and Hebrews would be from the associates, that has led more people astray, away from God, than all other books combined, save perhaps the Quran. Paul's letters mirror Satan's original scheme, whereby he twisted Yahweh's word in the garden and then removed what God had said from its context to beguile. As a result, Paul's epistles are the most deceiving letters ever written, the world's most rotten fruit. So in conclusion, Yahusha delineated the consequence of believing the contradictory pontifications which became the New Testament and eventually the new religion of Christianity. But before I share his conclusion with you, I want you to know that as we consider this next statement, I have moved the negation provided in the 4th century Greek manuscripts relative to this comment to where I'm convinced it belongs. I know, as you should know, that Yahusha spoke Hebrew, not Greek, that Mataniah was recorded in Hebrew, not Greek, and that this eyewitness account was translated into Greek in a religious Christian environment by Copts century later, and that no copy of anything between Mataniah 612 and 1013 exists prior to Constantine, when wholesale changes were made to the text to accommodate and amalgamate the new Roman religion with its pagan ancestry. So we are obliged to be on our guard to use the context of Yahusha's Torah discussions and our understanding of Yahweh's Torah to properly present what comes next. Therefore, consider this. All of those calling me Lord, Lord, will not enter the kingdom of heaven. But to the contrary, those in heaven are those who do my Father's will. Many will say to me in this specific day, Lord, Lord, did we not speak inspired utterances and prophecies in your name and drive out demons in your name and perform many miracles in your name? And then at that time I will profess to them that I never knew them. You must depart from me, those who bring about that which is in opposition to the Torah. Remember in a program a couple of days ago, we had someone call who had a very good question, but before he asked his question, he talked about being saved and having a salvation experience in Jesus' name.
Yep.
Well, that is what the fix that we get into. We don't consider Yahusha's testimony in the Sermon on the Mount. He said, depart from me, all of you who bring about that which is an opposition to the Torah. Christianity is an opposition to the Torah. Paul's letters are in opposition to the Torah. Calling God Lord, Lord precludes you from entering heaven. He will say to those, and it doesn't matter that those who say Lord, Lord believe that they have spoken inspired utterances. It doesn't matter if they think they have predicted the future, as this guy said about predicting something that happened to his mother. It doesn't prevail that just because you have cast out a demon or have performed miracles in a name other than Yahweh, that it matters, because God says, I will profess to them that I never knew them. You must depart from me.
Well,
all who bring about that which is in opposition to the Torah.
I think it's more than just a title he's talking about. He's saying that you've changed my character. And we've been through this before. You know, Yahweh wants to be greeted, welcomed as an individual. And you don't walk up to individuals you don't know and start bowing and scraping and groveling and calling them Lord and asking them to dictate terms to you. And
yes,
that's what the very term Lord.
Yes, particularly when you call God by the very title that he ascribed to Satan. The end of our program today. Please join us again tomorrow. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie
right,
guy.
My friend.
There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100
and
have a great time
than
getting
normal,
there.
But
I'm going to give you a free...